Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper, and remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. I gotta tell you something, people. You know, I love when I have a guest on who is not only an actor or a singer or a director or a writer. They do all this stuff, and my guest today does all of it, and it's really amazing. She's a singer, and which I want to find out what a mezzo soprano is. I read on her website that she's a mezzo soprano, and you know her from as Dee Dee McCall from Hunter, and I believe she directed an episode of that. And my guest is Stephanie Kramer. How you doing, Stephanie?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing? Freezing back there.
Yeah, I know. I told you it's just so cold. So I saw something on your Facebook, and I want to hear how great this must have been. I saw you were at the Hollywood show a few weeks ago, which I went to when I was in LA, and it was you did a Hunter panel. And as a performer, as an actor, how great is it for you when the fans can reach out to you and, you know, show their adulation? And it must make you feel great. One, because you're getting adulation, but two, to meet the people who've supported you. What was that like, that show?
Well, that's just it. It's the opportunity to be able to meet people from all over the world, truly, who really appreciated the show, became huge fans, followed it. I mean, they remember more about that show than I do. But it's so heartwarming, you know, and it's also humbling. I have people that come through, generations, like grandparents, parents, kids. And, I mean, it just keeps going. It just, like, repurposes itself along the generations. Families watched it together. It's incredible. It's the power of television, right? It's the power of television.
Well, I think also now it's that everything's so much more accessible. You know, years ago, you'd have to set your VCR to see something. But now, you can find anything. And so, as you said, the generations, I talked to a lot of musicians who, they go through that. Like, they're you know, they played for a parent, and the parents had a kid, and the kid had a kid. So they have these generations. And it just shows that entertainment is so, it's ageless. And, you know, people sit there and say, oh, you know, I'm too old for this, I'm too young for that. But entertainment is ageless if it's good.
Well, I agree with you. And I mean, there are some films that, you know, came out in the 40s that to me are one of the greatest films ever made. And you say to people, you have to see this film because it's ageless. If it's good, it's good. If it's quality, it sustains. I mean, everybody likes what they like. But for some reason, Hunter came out and just hit a resonant chord within the population at large. And overseas as well. And it just became one of the biggest crime dramas in the world. I mean, even today, it just blows my mind. I was back in June. So what was that, 6 months ago or seven, whatever it was. And I was being celebrated at the 35th Shanghai Television Festival for Hunter. That show was, you know, China was a closed society, and when they opened up and allowed television to come in, they only allowed two shows. I don't know what one of them was, but the other one was Hunter. And so that became this extraordinary hit throughout all of China. And as a result, we became incredibly popular there. And not just there, I mean, France, Italy, Germany, Australia, just everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
Well, it's amazing how America TV travels. Like me and my wife, for our fifth anniversary, we were in Italy last year. And we had watching TV and the show Castle. And I know Seamus, who was in that show, was on. And it's just weird to watch the show and it's dubbed and they're speaking in Japanese. And he's speaking in Italian. So I sent him a message on Facebook. I said, dude, I said, I'm watching you speak in Italian right now. He goes, well, how do I sound? I go, it doesn't sound like you. So what was it like? How did the people react to you in Shanghai? Because you're a superstar there. As you said, there's only two shows. So watch. Were people just swarming you or were they very grateful?
Well, at that time, when I first went, the first time I went was the third Shanghai Television Festival. That was different from how I just went to the 35th. So back then, though, on the third celebration, whenever that was, 1989 or so, it was insane. It was just insane. I couldn't leave my hotel room. I couldn't go, I couldn't walk, I couldn't do anything. It was just being chased by hordes of people. And I mean, even the hotel suite that I was in, that entire floor of whatever hotel I was in, and it was very nice, it was completely empty except for my suite. And there was a guard at the door, and guards at the elevator, and guards at the exit. And I'm like, why? Who's coming? What's happening? But it was a lot. But it's been that way at the beginning. I'm very popular in France, and I love France, so that's great for me, But at its milieu, when it first was happening at this, it was just difficult for me to just go out on the street in Paris. Now I can walk around, and it's great.
Well, that's
But
better. Yeah, that's good because you can actually.
it's not like a good, cool feeling to be chased by a whole bunch of people and thrown into a car and speed away. People go, ooh, no, there's no ooh. It's that's not cool. That's creepy, So there's those parts of being really popular in certain parts of the world that are not fun,
Now, when you were a young child, on 19, did you want to act? Did you want to sing? Did you want to do both? Because you're a very good singer and you're a songwriter, and creativity goes hand in hand. But sometimes, what did you want to do when you were younger? And I want to ask you, how did you know you could sing? I always wonder how people know that they can sing real good. I mean, because you hear some people and they're good, but what was your start? What was your goal when you were young?
Well, first of all, I used to just draw and paint when I was a little child, from the age of about 18 months till maybe like around 10. But that wasn't the only thing I did. I had my mom and dad's records, right? So, I mean, this is an old story, but it's true. It's all this Frank Sinatra, and they had the score of Camelot, and the musical, and other just incredible performers in the day, right? Beautiful, classic, great voices of all time. So I always grew up listening to that, and then the movie, the music in the 60s, I loved it. And in LA, we had a 9th Street KHJ radio, so my mom always had that in her car, and we'd listen and sing along. And I can remember when Mary Poppins came out, the movie. Which to this day I love, love, love. I would watch it over and over and over again, and have, and I still do. But it came in the movie theater, and it just like blew me out of the water. And I loved singing along to that score, and I also loved singing along to Camelot, which they had that record. And I didn't think, oh, I can sing in the same register that this woman is singing, or I can sing that and I can do those notes. It just sort of was, oh, look, I'm doing this too, and isn't it wonderful? And it was just within myself. It wasn't like I was going, hey, mom, listen to this, But when I was about, I guess, 7 years old, I was sitting with my mom, and I remember we were on the front porch, and she said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I'm going to be an actress, a singer. And she said, okay. So as soon as I got into junior high, what is that? 12, 13, 14, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there. I just got into theater, and I just started doing theater. And that continued on in through high school. And I was also a massive fan of films and watching television when I was a little kid. So it was just it was that connection for me. To this day, I love films. I can't get enough of them.
Well, it's
So I always
amazing.
kind of knew. It was just sort of, oh, this is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm here. This is what I'm supposed to do.
So you knew, so and you were in Los Angeles, which was great because it's a lot better to know what you're going to do in Los Angeles instead of it being in Nebraska because you can
Probably,
spread around there. So what do you do when you get out of high school? What is are you saying I'm going to go to college or I'm going to go act? What are you going to do? Because that's such a for performers, that's such a weird age. A lot of people go to school for theater. And a lot of people sometimes just say, I'm moving to LA. What did you do when you graduated high school?
Well, I was doing straight plays and musicals in high school. So I was just already in that role. And by the way, our high school music, our theater department was extraordinary. And our director was excuse me, Bob. It was Bob Corelli. And there were the kids that came in from all around the city just to go to Chatsworth High School to work with Bob Corelli and his theater department because it was that well known. I just lucked into it because I was in that area. But in the class surrounding me, we had people you would know. I mean, Val Kilmer and Mayor Winningham and Kevin Spacey and me and Rick Sparks and Diane Delano and Earlene Davis. I mean, all people who either went into TV, film, or theater. It was just this confluence of extraordinary young talent. So there was a lot of support, and that wonderful energy around it was always so joyful. So after I graduated, I applied to UCLA to go to the theater department and study there. I don't remember who told me about it, but he heard there was an audition for West Side Story with this theater here, and it was called the Valley Institute of Musical Arts, I think is what it was. I might have that wrong, but I auditioned for Maria, and opening night was my 18th birthday, and that was great. And we had the full orchestra and the whole thing. It wasn't like a high school show, you know,
Right.
which they were great too, by the way. But I remember thinking, wow, I can do this, you know, and it just clicked. It just clicked for me, and so I got my notice back from UCLA that I was accepted, but I was missing a science class. Now, I had absolutely no guidance when it came to you graduating high school, let's talk to your guidance counselor, or let's finish your program. Where are you going to apply? Nothing. I just went, oh, UCLA is good. Oh, let's go there. I mean, I knew nothing. I was just like, la, you know? And I got in, except you have to take this science class. I was like, okay. I thought, where am I going to do that? So I went to a Cal State Northridge for that first beginning of freshman year to take that science class and then transfer to UCLA, right? Well, I had to start over and do like acting 101. And I had just started in this musical. I'd done tons of, and I'm going, what kind of a deal is that, man? So I go into this acting class, they're like, now let's talk about acting. I'm like, oh my God. So I it wasn't a good fit for me. And the thing that just propelled me right out of there was I saw a flyer that they were auditioning for Three Penny Opera. And I thought, great. So I auditioned. And it came down to between me and some other gal, a girl. And I audition and you go back, and then the director calls me to the back of the auditorium and he says, how old are you? And I said, I'm 18. He goes, are you a freshman? I went, yeah. He goes, his words, he goes, you're one of the most talented people we've ever had come through here, and your voice is fabulous, and you are by far the best singer and performer for this part, but I can't give it to you. I said, why not? He goes, because you're a freshman and I have to give it to a senior. And I was like, ding, 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 I'm out of here. You know what I mean? I thought, wait a minute. I was so depressed. I said, I don't need to keep studying with people that are making me go back to what stuff I did when I was 12. I need to work. So I just stayed and finished out the year and took other classes that were of interest to me. And I signed up as a senior so that I could take all the classes that were just interesting to me. And then I got this letter while I was there from the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York, which I had never heard of. Again, I had no guidance, I had no awareness of where to, you know, I just thought, okay. And it was from the director, and he said, you've come to our attention, and we're very interested in having you come to our school. And I'm thinking, who's this guy, and what is he talking about in here about me? I live in LA, you're in New York, you know what I mean? So, and if you can't come to New York, you might try our school in Pasadena. So I did. And I auditioned and I wound up going to American Academy of Dramatic Arts in Pasadena. And on graduation day, we were doing Stephen Sondheim's musical Company, which is such a great show. And there were three agents from the William Morris Agency in the audience, and they asked to sign me on graduation day.
That's
And then
amazing.
that opened up the door for me to start working in TV.
Now, do you ever think that if you had guidance, your career might have been completely different? Where someone would have been in your head saying you shouldn't do this. Like you think about that, because it seems like it's all kismet. Like you get this and this happens, and you don't want this role because you're talented, but you're a freshman. But if someone was giving you guidance, I think your career may have gone completely different because someone may have got in your head instead of you just saying, no, I have to do this.
Maybe, but you know what? Eventually, everything works out the way it's supposed to, I think. So for me, it certainly worked out great. And when I was at the academy after I graduated, they said, "Okay, so now you're going to go to New York and you're going to work and you're going to do musicals and you're going to." I said, "No, actually, I'm going to stay in LA and sing rock and roll." And the board went like, "Ah, no, you can't do that." And I said, "Yeah, it'll be fun." And that's what I wound up doing.
So,
Plus,
now tell me about the rock and roll, because I want to hear about this, because LA had such a great music scene. I mean, you had all the great, the whiskey, the Troubadour, everything just was, everything's great. What band were you in? I mean, what kind of music were you singing?
Well, first of all, I love music, period. Pretty much, not all of it, but a lot of it across the board. And if you think about the 70s, the late 70s, early 80s, way back, there was, that's when, disco was coming out, everybody's doing just, and I didn't resonate with that. I know it's like fun dance music. I mean, it's fun, and but I kept going, that's really not me. So I really connected with all that LA, the country rock that was coming out of Los Angeles in the late 70s. It was the Eagles and Jackson Brown and Linda Ronstadt and Bonnie Raitt and Jackson, I mean, all of that music because it told stories. And then I got really into country music because it told stories. It wasn't let's dance, let's dance, let's dance, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but I didn't connect with that. And so I was starting to work in television, and I said, I really want to sing in a group. I want to sing some cool country stuff. And there were these people auditioning. Their band was called the Doo-Wah Riders, which is like, what? I thought, why not? So, and they were looking for the female lead singer. So we wound, I got, wound up working with them, good group of guys. And man, we did like four sets a night, 5 nights a week. And then I auditioned for a pilot for a series at MTM that was written by Rick Keller and Bob Comfort, such talented men. And it was kind of like Nashville before its time. And it was called One Night Band. And I got the role as the lead singer and three guys. And we traveled in a 24-track truck. So there were three original songs per episode. And it was country rock. And so I had already been doing country swing, and it was like country rock, this is cool. And I was just loving it. Well, then there was a strike, and as strikes happened, everything got put on hold. And a year later, or whatever the heck it was, when it was over, new people come into those positions to make those decisions, and they take everything that had a green light and then push it off the desk and go, what do we have now? It's just how it happens. So.
That's always awful when that happens. You
Yeah,
see so
it is
many
what it is.
shows and someone says, oh, it's not my, and it's like, well, it's chess. Now you were working in TV. What was your first paid acting gig on TV? Do you remember?
My first line, which got me my Screen Actors Guild card, which was on Starsky and Hutch. And I said, so I answered the phone and I said something like, I don't know, Mr. Smith, it's for you. I'm something along those lines, And then that got me my SAG card. And then I kept auditioning and moving on up and
But, you know, I love looking at, you know, actors' IMDb's, because, you know, you see all these shows I watched and I liked, and, you know, you look at your IMDb, you know, Vegas, Dynasty, Bosom Buddies. You were an episode of Bosom Buddies. I mean,
so much fun. So much fun.
That, you know, this, me and my wife are talking about that. So many people who know Tom Hanks and love Tom Hanks don't remember Bosom Buddies. It was a great show. Do you, what was your episode about on that? Because I loved that show.
It was great. They were great. Yeah. I was the girlfriend, not Tom's girlfriend. Oh my God. I'm
Peter Scolari.
Peter. Yes. I'm so, so sorry, Peter. He did pass. God bless him. Way too early. And, he was going to break up with me. And apparently I had some sort of like a anxiety compelled vocal reaction. And it was like, over and over, and then ran off. I don't remember. It was just fun. I had a great time. I love doing comedy. So we had a really good time.
Well, you know, it's funny also on IMDb. This is a credit you have from The Man with Two Brains. Beautiful Girl Hit by Car. Now that is one of the best. That is one of the best lines. And now, do you? I mean, did you? Tell me about it.
I think I was still in school, and it was Deborah. God, I can't even remember. I wish I could remember exactly who it was, but it was one of them. I think it might have been Deborah Corwin, and I could be wrong with that. But she was a wonderful dance instructor, and we were talking. She goes, "Hey, there's this bit part in a movie, and they need a beautiful girl to do just come out. You don't even have lines; you just have to stand there, whatever you do." And I said, "Yeah." So I put on this. They had me in this metal dress. The dress weighed 35 pounds. I'm not kidding you. We weighed it. It's like you put it on, and all of a sudden you're like, "I used to be 5'6", and now I'm 4'10". Does this? How do I walk in this? You know, it's like, wow, is this heavy? She goes, "It's very heavy." I put it on. I said, "No kidding." And I had to walk out of some restaurant or club, and I guess Steve Martin was looking for a beautiful girl to put somebody else's brain into or something.
Right.
It was so silly. And yeah, I got hit by a car, and I'm supposed to be dead. And he's going, "Oh, this is perfect. This is just what I want. You know, this will be great." And then I start to come to, and he's like, "No, you're supposed to be dead." He starts strangling. And that was my working with Steve Martin. But you know what was cool was sitting next to him and Carl Reiner on set. And just kind of going, hey, you know, and talking and shooting the breeze, because those two guys are amazing.
See, that's the stories I love. Now then, you know, you're a working actor, you're working, and then We Got It Made, that was your first series?
No, Hunter was my fourth series.
Where did We Got It Made come in?
That was the third.
Okay.
The second, well, the first was a series for Lorimar with David Jacobs. Again, someone who passed, but what a sweet and talented man he was. And it was called Married the First Year. And it was about a group of high school kids. And one of our group of kids, we were like 16 or something, got married in high school. So it was, what is it like when these two 16-year-old kids get married, and what's it like for friends? And it was just, that's what it was, following the journey of these kids. I wasn't the girl that got married. It was Sarah Lee McCluskey and, oh God, I'm so bad with it. I think it was Cindy Glover. But that was a really fun show. I don't remember how long it lasted. It didn't get picked up past whatever. I don't even remember how many episodes we did after the pilot. And then the second series I did was this really weird, like, what is this? I played Princess Tara in the secret underground city of Shimera. What? And on the top of the earth, it's the Old West, cowboys and Indians and all that. But in the center of the earth is where I lived and ruled the center of the earth. And then we would come up on the earth and like come out of time portals to guys on horseback. And I mean, I couldn't tell you, I don't remember that much about it, except I remember this purple satin gown and a tiara when I came through this glowing portal door. But that was the second series. And the third one was We Got It Made. And after I finished We Got It Made, I mean, I was guest starring and reoccurring in a lot of just everything on TV. I was so fortunate. And there was a show that Stephen Cannell had called Riptide, which you might, Perry King and Joe Penny. Yeah.
Perry's been
And
on my show. Perry's been on my show. Yeah.
terrific actor. So they were doing what was very popular at the time called a spin-off pilot. So Riptide was the show, but they, Cannell and NBC, had an idea for a spin-off pilot where they would have two young female detectives, me and another actress, would guest star on that episode of Riptide. And based on the numbers and what the, if there was chemistry and blah, 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 they could take that grouping of me and this other young lady, and it would be a spin-off pilot for a whole other show, these two female detectives, right? Or private investigators is what it was. And so to do that, though, we had to sign, contracts for the series and everything if it got picked up, etc. So we're thinking, who knows, maybe it'll get picked up and be one of Stephen J. Cannell shows. So we wrap, and I get home, and on my doorstep is an envelope from the network, and I open it up, and it's a script that says Hunter. So I call my agent, and I said, "What is this?" And he says, "Well, this is another pilot that Cannell and NBC have, and they want you to audition for that." I said, "But can we do that? I mean, we just signed this other one to go to series. If it does, I'm committed. So how can we do this?" "Oh, it'll just be in second position. One of them will get picked up, and we'll just okay." So I auditioned, and the rest is history. And I was really fortunate because that role was written for somebody who was like 10, 12 years young, older than me. But Stephen always had my back. He just kept going, "No, this one, this one."
What
God
is
bless
it?
you, Stephen.
What was it like working with him? Because was such a brilliant guy. And I know a friend of mine was on a show he came out with later called Murder in the First, and his son was involved with that. And he said it was so funny when you went to like the Christmas party. It was like Steve Cannell had like a whole block, and he said, but he remembered everybody's name. He was just that type of guy. What was it like when you go in and you know it's going to be quality? I mean, it must be great as an actor because you know you're going to get good stuff.
Well, yes, it makes a world of difference when you can really appreciate the writing and the character that was developed. And it was written initially by Frank Lupo, whom I also really enjoyed so much. He was so smart. He was such a good writer, and he was funny as hell. And so here was this part, and I remember I read it and I went, "I have a feeling about this." I mean, I had like a gut, like, this is it. I think this is really going to do something. And I have a dear friend of mine who we're still very close, Jack Scalia, who's another actor. And I said, "I want you to read this and come over and tell me what you think." So he reads it, and he comes over, he looks at me, he goes, "You got to do this, Steph. There's something about this." I said, "Well, that's what I am feeling the same thing." So, of course, we were right.
It,
And I was most grateful.
it's funny you mentioned Jack Scalia because I believe he was the one in my hometown, Cherry Hill, New Jersey. He opened up a restaurant or was involved in a restaurant years ago, and everyone was like, oh my God, Hollywood's coming to New Jersey. So next time you talk to him, see if the, I think it was called Red, White, and Blue. It was like a nightclub with a pork place, but it was in Cherry Hill. Ask him about a restaurant in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, because I'm pretty
Hold on, I'm
sure.
writing it down. Hold on. Red, white, and blue. And it was in Cherry Hills, New Jersey?
Cherry Hill, New Jersey, yeah.
Cherry Hill.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's funny. So, okay.
You never know.
I know, because I remember that name. I was like, we know who he is. So you get Hunter. Now, what is it like when you first meet Fred Dreyer? Because Fred Dreyer was a legendary football player, and he's a very big man. In fact, when I worked at a restaurant in Burbank for a few years called Gordon Biersch, and I used to always wait on him, and I remember he'd always get the seared ahi tuna with double the bok choy, no rice. But he would always get that. So he was into his health, you know, then. So what was it like when you first meet him? Because you're meeting this football player and he's an imposing guy. He's a very big guy.
Well, the first time I even knew his name, I was, I don't know, 14 maybe. And my older brother was watching football. And he goes, come here, you gotta watch this. And I don't remember if it was the LA Rams, the New York Jets. I don't remember who it was, but he's saying, well, he's talking about the game. And I'm like, just going, yeah, okay. I'm into football. But I'm watching, and I'm looking. And he goes, and that guy. I see that guy, whatever the number was. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, this guy's great. His name is Fred Dreyer. And he's really good. Watch him do blah, 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 blah. You know? So I'm watching. I'm like, okay. Next. And then I grow up. And during that journey of auditioning and doing guest spots and all this kind of stuff, at one point, I got asked by the network to read opposite three different men. I can't remember the name of it, but I said, yes, of course, I'll audition with all three of them. And one of those guys was Fred. He didn't get that show. This other guy got it, who was also really tall, dark hair, and he wore like a white cowboy hat. I don't remember what the name of the show was. Whatever. So that's over and done, right? Then before Hunter, after that, then before Hunter, I'm in the health food store, and I'm standing in the frozen food section, as I should be. And I look up and I see Fred standing down there, and I'm thinking, well, that's that guy that I auditioned with a couple years back for the thing, blah, 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 blah. And I said, Fred, right? He goes, yeah. I said, Stephanie, I auditioned. Oh, yeah. So we're chatting along and just talking, and okay, well, have a good day. So then when I came to audition for Hunter, they had cast Hunter first. And I see Fred, I'm like, the health food store, the thing auditioning with the guys in the show. So there was that little weird weaving through, you know? But yeah, he's 6 foot 7. He's a real big, or 6 foot 6, whatever. He's a big dude.
So the show, the first
You
season.
said, oh, he's really big, but I wasn't intimidated by him because he was a physically large guy, you know? He's just a big guy.
The first season, how does a show do? And when do you know you're getting a second season? Or back then, did they just give you 3 seasons to start? Because TV's so different now. Do you know? I mean, because, you know, was it something you signed? It was back then, it was probably 23 episodes because that's the way it worked back then, or whatever it
Me
was,
too.
22. So did you guys, when did you know a second season was in the working?
Oh, I don't remember. Sorry, I don't remember. I mean, that first year was it was a really hard show to work on. In town, people called it the toughest show to work on in town because I think we went through all 7 or 8 full crews, and it's because no one could take the hours. It was too much. They didn't quite have it kind of down to a groove. It was just everything all at once, but that demanded 18-hour days. So nobody ever slept. I mean, I can remember one time we did 20-hour days, 3 days in a row. So basically you're dead on your feet, and the crew couldn't manage, you know, and can't have people driving home at 3 in the morning and you get an accident, you know. It was one thing after other. It was tough. It didn't quite find its groove, you know, and how to make this a streamlined operation so that we're all not dead at the end of 22 episodes, medically. And so we finally, it did get worked out. I couldn't tell you when we got picked up because I don't remember. But over time, pardon me, it just found the right groove, you know. And Fred and I, we would be spontaneous. We'd ad lib here and there, and within the parameters of the characters. But it also enabled us to develop that chemistry and that kind of flow which I think is what made the show unique and different and made it stand out. It's like the people. You're going to watch these two people do something every week. You either like them or you don't. But for whatever reason, the chemistry between us came off the screen and people resonated with that, thankfully. And they liked that. And that's what took that energy up over the wave that made the show just start to fly. Of course, we had terrific writers. It took a while for sometimes they'd come in a writer's room and, we had never even met them. And we'd get a script and we'd read it and go, well, this character wouldn't say this. Now, that writer doesn't know the character like we would. And it's no offense to them. They're extremely talented and doing an incredible job and a difficult job. And I'd say, oh, but we got to rewrite this. So we were constantly rewriting scripts. I bet you they didn't like us at first, but it just made it a little more streamlined. And sometimes the vernacular we would adjust to make it sound more like the character's voice. Not the writer's voice.
So now you directed.
So we did that together quite a bit. We both directed on the show.
What made you decide to direct? Did you ask for it? Was it brought
I'm
to you
sorry,
because
I think you froze.
it? Can you hear me?
I just thought it'd be, yeah, I thought it would just be fun to do. I would have enjoyed it. And Fred says, I said, yeah, I'm doing that too. So we both just, we directed some episodes. One of them I co-created and, it was just sort of like, why wouldn't you? We had great crews, wonderful people. They worked so hard and they were all so gifted and talented in what they did in each category, every person. It was just great. It really was. And one thing that was of benefit for all of us, really, not just Fred and I, but the crew, was you get a lot of directors that come in. There's a different director every single week, right? And sometimes they'd come in and you'd be like, I'm sorry, why is this person here? Like, wait a minute, this is not gonna work. And so over time, he and I, we said, we're gonna sit down and put together a list of five directors that we wanna work with. I mean, first of all, they're smart, they're talented, they get it on time, they do the page count, the crew loves them, they're great with the crew, they're terrific with actors, and you like them. As human beings, you're like, oh, look who's here. Great, I get to work with you this week, And so we had the ability to do that at that time. So we said, here's who we're going to work with. So they just put those five guys on a cycle going forward from then on. Made a big difference because you can't do, a 17, 18 page count a day and bring it in. It's just, you have to have a crew that just is like fine working machine. And eventually that's what happened.
Now, because Hunter was a hit, and it was, and it ran for a while, a long time, you also, I read that you got to perform with Bob Hope, and you got to dance with Sammy Davis Jr. Now, was that because, which I'm a big Sammy Davis Jr. fan. I see such a talent. But was that because of Hunter, right? Because you sat there. I mean, was it? So tell me how that came about. First of all, Bob Hope too. I mean, you got to work with so tell me about that because this fascinates me.
Well, they used to do a thing. Remember, it was just those three networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, right? So they would have the upfronts every year. They still have upfronts. But they would also have, at the beginning of the fall, before all the new shows started every season, or the shows that had already been on, whatever they had on their roster was celebrated in a 2-hour musical special. Remember, it would be like the NBC All-Star Show. And every fall they'd have the or big dance numbers and people would sing and they would celebrate all the talent on their shows. Well, I was a singer and I danced. So they found that out real quick. So I would come on and it's like I don't remember the first one I sang in, and then the second one I opened up that show and we did that song The Heat Is On. And I had this big dance number and all of a sudden. So obviously over time, they're watching. So I don't quite remember how. I think it was a. I think it was Bob Hope's Easter special. I think. And there was a couple of us gals, and it came on, and I'm just like, come on, man, it's Bob Hope. It's Bob Hope, you know? Oh my God. That's like one of the greats of all industry, entertainment, anywhere, ever, period. Mic drop, end of sentence, you know? And so I'm like, oh my God, I'm sitting here singing with Bob Hope. What the hell? What? Alternative reality right here. Just, you know. So, and then from there, he had me come back and do one of his specials. I was at home. I was just coming in from the supermarket, and the phone was ringing. And I pick it up, and it's Bob. And he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "Oh, I just got home from the market. I'm putting away my, you know, canned soup or whatever the heck I got." He goes, "Hey, have you got a minute? I've got this idea for a song I want us to sing on the special." And I'm like, "Yeah. I mean, what am I going to say?
Right.
No, I got to go put the cat food away. Call me later." You know, so it was like, yeah, and so I'm listening, he's singing to me on the phone, and I'm like in my house by myself, looking at my dog, and I want to go, the dog didn't get it, but I was so, I mean, I'm a massive fan. He was such a kind man, such a talent, professional. I just can't say enough good about him. And so I was like, that's a great song. He goes, now you sing this part. Not so we did that together. And then there was the, I don't know, I think it was like the 85th birthday celebration, Bob, NBC honors Bob Hope thing. And it was a big 2-hour special. And they said, we want you to, he called and said, I want you to open the show with Sammy Davis Jr. Oh, no, why, who the hell would want to do that? I mean, what? Yeah. And Leslie Uggams also. So, yeah, I remember standing in the rehearsal hall with the piano player, and Sammy Davis Jr. walks in, and you just go, you know? I mean, I'm a massive fan too. And hi, it couldn't have been sweeter. And we sang the song, and then we worked out the dance routine and everything. And you know, I remember he was a very small man, you know, and so I was in my sneakers while we're doing all the rehearsals or little dance ballet shoes. And then when it came time to do it, I'm in heels. And he's behind me, he goes, now you put on the heels. What just happened? So that was a thrill. And then he came through and he acted on Hunter also. He did a guest spot on the show.
That
It
is
was
so
awesome.
cool. You know, when you think about, you know, it's like, man, Sammy Davis Jr., you know, you dance with him and he was on your show. Now, with Hunter, as the seasons went on, did you feel your character was growing, or did you feel you were growing as an actor? Or, I mean, did,
Yes.
and
All
what,
of yes to all of that.
explain
Yeah.
that.
Well, the first of all, we were evolving as human beings. We were growing and changing. I certainly was, you know. I mean, I was 20, whatever, when I started the show. So it was like I was growing up at a whole different level, too. I mean, I wasn't a child, but you know, I'm talking about an inner journey of maturation that occurs, you know, during those years, you know. And it was happening while I was doing the show. So I think the show got better and better. The writing got better and better. I think we became better at what we did. It was just it just evolved, and it just kept going, you know. And there was so much support for it, and people just loved it, and they still do. They still. I get stopped. This is something that I think is so cool. You know, I played a very specific type of woman, right? That hadn't been seen at the level of which the show offered for me to present to people. I am constantly stopped, even today, and certainly at the Hollywood shows. I'll have women come up to me and say, it's because of you I became an attorney. It's because of you I left my abusive husband. It's because of you I became a cop. It's because of you and watching you I got the strength to determine I could go and do. And Of course, it wasn't because of me, Stephanie. It was because of that role. This woman who was stood on her own authenticity, she stood in her own sovereignty and her power and her own strength without sacrificing her femininity, but she could hold her own and did. And that had not been seen in crime dramas at the level of which we presented it before. So that changed how women were presented in crime dramas from then on. And I, for one, am grateful when someone stops and a woman says that to me, because I'm somebody who always thinks no matter what it is you're going to do for a living, and even if you don't work, just try to make a positive difference in the world. And hopefully, whatever you're doing in your job will allow you the opportunity to do that. So I'm grateful, so grateful for that, because it was able to positively impact the lives of a lot of women.
Now,
that wasn't my intention doing it. It just evolved and happened.
And that's awesome, because, you know, it is so strong. You know, I have a big networking group back here, and I used to have a business podcast. And I would always have all three female panels, because my mom graduated Temple University in 1952 as a marketing major, and she was the only woman in her class. So
wow.
I always had this certain admiration, you know, and it was something that, you know, I always felt, you know, they got to be on the same playing field. But it's great that you did that. Now, you left after season six, right?
Right.
Now, was that because you had a record contract, or why did you leave?
Because I knew it was time to go. First of all, we were working in record contract, and I had one. I had to go record an album and all that. And that was an energy focus for me. But I also knew intuitively that I was going to get married and have a child. I could not achieve that and work a 90 to 100 hour work week. And I'm not, wasn't the kind of mom, and I'm there's no judgment here. Everybody has to do what was right for them. But I didn't want to like have a child and then hand it off to a nanny and say, send me video when she takes her first steps. I'm working on a movie. I didn't want that. I wanted to be fully present in raising my, turned out to be my daughter. And that was more important. That was much more important.
So you leave, but then now, amazingly, then there's 200 movies down the road. So because
yeah.
You're in demand, so that must be something, as you sit there going, I left, I got to do what I want. I left to be the mom, see the steps, and now they're bringing me back. That must have been
well,
amazing.
When she was 3 months old, I did, well, after I left Hunter, I did two features, and then I recorded a CD, and then I got married and had my daughter. When she was 3 months old, I did another feature. There were other parts of movies in there while she was little, but she was with me. And then in, I don't know, what was it, 2000? No. In 1994, Stephen Cannell called me and said, hey, I want to do a Hunter movie for television. And here's a story for you and Fred, and will you want to do it? And I said, I'd love to, but I'm pregnant. You know, so Fred did that movie by himself. Then, ironic, wonderful synchronicity. I was at a luncheon for it was Ray Bradbury, and there was some other author, and there was Stephen Cannell. I didn't know that, but my friend said, "Hey, come with me to this book thing." And so I went, and there was Stephen. I hadn't seen him in a while. And he comes over and he gives me a big hug. He goes, hey, we're bringing back Hunter. Are you in? I said, yeah. And it was like 2002, I think, 2003, if somewhere in there. And later on, we're talking. And we did two more Hunter movies for NBC. And they were the highest rated films of the year for the network. So they ordered the show again. And we did, I don't really think we won. I think we did six episodes. It never found its place. It was in different time slots across the country. So it never quite found that pigeonhole, you know. But the thing that was cool about it was we were filming down in San Diego now, and it was almost like 60% at least of the same crew we had. And I remember sitting on the chair and looking at Fred and going, is this just the weirdest thing? I mean, look at this. Here we and we got and look at who's here. It was wild.
Now, I want to talk to you about your singing and your songwriting. Now, when did you start writing songs, and what is your process? Because every songwriter is a different process, because you're also someone who acts. So you're not just someone who's just strictly a singer-songwriter. You have a lot of stuff going on. So when do you find time to write, and what is your process for songwriting?
I think the first song I wrote, I was 12, I think. But it was like, and then I wrote a lot of poems, kids writing poems, it's funny. I hear sometimes I'll just hear the music. You just hear it. You get a download. That's how I put it. I get downloads. Don't we all in different ways? And I'm going, what's this song? And I start singing it and then I'm working it out. And then I'm thinking, oh, this is about, whatever it was about. And then the words just would come. I know that sounds kind of strange, but sometimes some song would just like happen in 10 minutes. And then there's a song that would, you'd get to a point and you'd be like, geez, I need another verse here. I remember there was this one song and I needed another verse. And I thought, I'm kind of stuck here and I'm not quite sure how I knew what I wanted to say, but it wasn't forming smoothly for me. So I believe meditation. So I just meditated and I asked, I said, please give me this third verse to this song and here's what it is. 15 minutes later, there it was. I said, thank you very much. I wrote it down. And that's just how it, things happen like that. It's like a pro, you I hear it. I just internally I hear it.
Now, do you still write songs? Or is that still something you do? Or have you stepped away from it a little bit? Or do you still do it?
I haven't been writing music in quite some time. I have a lot of unsung songs that I've written, but I wound up actually writing. I have two gentlemen I write with. There's two features, and one's a pilot for a series, and they're being shopped now. So I also love film, as I said. So I've been doing that and thoroughly enjoying it. But that first CD, initially, I was in London, and Nils Lofgren and I were co-producing, and it was real rock and roll, and it was so much fun. And he's a super talent and a very good man. And as luck would have it, the old adage of the record company screwed us, and it was like, thanks so much. Oh boy. So that ended, and that particular CD did not come out. I wound up going off and doing a couple of movies. I circled back to it, and when I looked at it again, there were some songs I didn't feel like I wanted to release anymore. That was right for them. It wasn't for this. So came up with other music, and I wound up recording it in a completely different sort of vibe, more like adult contemporary, not so rock. And that worked out really great. And that was my first CD. It was called One Dream. And then like I said, I grew up listening to Frank Sinatra and all those great singers, and oh my God, right? So I really love the Great American Songbook. And yeah, it's everywhere, but it's everywhere because it's good. It's great, man. You can't go wrong with that. So I did an act, and I performed in different clubs all around. Sang songs from the Great American Songbook, and I recorded one of those concerts live at a jazz club, and that was really fun. I went over and was asked to represent the United States in an international music festival down in Mexico. That was really cool because there were artists from all these different countries, and oh, it was just great. It was just great.
You know, you've had such a fascinating career. And, you know, you mentioned Bob Hope and you mentioned Sammy Davis and you mentioned singing. Give me like two other highlights that you look back on your career and go, this is really something that I can't believe I did this. I mean, dance with Sammy Davis Jr. doesn't get much bigger than singing with
Yeah,
Bob
I mean,
Hope
that's
sitting on the
about
phone. But give me a few, because, or people you worked with that you never thought you would work with.
Bob Hope and Sammy Davis Jr. That, yes. But coming through, we had actors that came through Hunter, like that went on to become massive, you know, like George Clooney, and who's a great guy. Oh God, as soon as you asked me, all their names like flashed out of my head. Oh, for God's sakes. Okay. The movie with Marilyn Monroe and the Diamonds of the World, Girls' Best Friends. Remember
Jack
her walking
Lemmon?
in? No. The woman who played with
Jane
her,
Russell?
Jane Russell. She came in on the show. Jane Russell. You know, you're sitting there going, look who's in the makeup chair. So I'm sorry I don't have the list in my head, but there were a lot of people like that that came through, and you're going, oh my God, look who's here. I mean, one, I had the. I still don't quite know how this happened, but I got invited to Frank Sinatra's birthday party. And there was probably, I don't know, maybe 40 people or something. It was a private event. It wasn't as televised. I was like, you're kidding, right? What? I'm so there. And of course, I brought my mom because it was all, you know. I mean, there was like Gregory Peck and everybody. I'm sitting next to Donald O'Connor and Ella Fitzgerald, and I'm like, oh, somebody just pinch me, you know? And but the beauty of that evening was I got to finally tell him. I've been singing his music since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and that what it meant to me, and what his musical career did for me as a musical artist and as a singer, and how inspiring it was. I mean, I got to talk to him about it. Who gets to do that, you know? So those kind of things are pretty special moments.
Well, you know, this has been great, and I want to ask you, this is the final question I always ask people, and you can talk personal or professional or both, but I always wonder, you know, when you look back at your life, and you've had such an amazing career, and you've done so much, and you've had a very blessed life, what makes you proud? You know, it's different saying, you know, I mean, you've had the highlights where you do Sammy Davis, but what makes you proud in your professional and personal? I know you're probably going to say, which every actor and musician says, what makes them proud in their personal life is their kids. That's always the thing. But what makes you proud when you look back and you go, man, you know, this, I'm so proud of this.
Well, yeah, in personal life, it's my daughter. I mean, I wound up raising her by myself. And yes, I'm extraordinarily proud of her. She's an amazing young woman, and I love her with all my heart and soul. It's just the greatest journey I've ever been on is being a mother. I know a lot of people go, nya, but yeah, it's true. It's true. What's made me proud in my work? I never thought about it like that. I never thought of, boy, am I proud of this? Hey, you know, it was just more, you finish a movie or you finish a project and you go, felt good. Not, I'm proud of this. Hey, it was more like just that felt good. That felt right. I really like the way that came out. Oh, isn't that fun? Because this is something that I don't know, a lot of people, they remember everything they've done. I do not. When I finish a project or an episode or a movie or a whatever, I close the door. God bless it. What a wonderful journey. And it's gone from me. I don't carry it in here because I got enough I got in here that I got to carry around. That I have people stop and go, oh, remember that movie and that scene when you did the bup-a-lup-bup-bup-bup-bup? I have no idea what they're talking about. I don't know what they're talking about. I'm just going, yeah, oh, that was good. And I'm thinking, what was that? I don't carry it. I don't have a problem with short-term memory or long-term memory or memory. It's just that it's so, it's been completed. And I literally, I was on television, I was trying to find something, and I saw Hunter, and I went, oh, let me look at that. I think it was on Amazon or something. And I look at it, and there's an episode, you know, and there I am with like this massive hair in the thing, and the, you know how we looked, our, we had no necks, we had shoulders that came out of our jaw, you know, those giant coats and stuff. And I'm watching it, and I swear to God, I couldn't tell you what was going on or what any of it was. I went, oh, I wonder what this was. No memory of it. I mean, I kind of remember that guy, but okay. Well, I gotta go because it's been done. It's, I'm that person. When something's finished for me, it's not that I don't appreciate, I'm greatly appreciative of it. I am in gratitude of it. But it's not like I was, I guess you could say, if you want to say proud, I mean, I'm proud of how Hunter has impacted so many people in such a wonderful way.
There you
And there's
go.
certain roles that I've done, I'm like, oh, I liked what I did with that. But I never thought of it in terms of being proud. It was just like I that felt right. For me, if it resonates in my heart and my body and my, I go, that felt right, then it was.
Well, there you go. Well,
There you go.
that's a great answer. Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on. I mean, you've had such a great career, and your
It's
website.
not over yet,
Oh, I know.
honey.
Your website is excellent. There's a lot of information on there. People, it's StephanieKramer.com, and you're on Facebook and you're on Instagram. So people follow her. Go find Hunter and watch Hunter. It was a great show. And all those 80s shows were great. You had Hunter, you had Miami Vice. They're all just great, great shows. So please go look up Stephanie. Also go to my website, coopertalk.net. You can find 1,056 episodes there. You can email me at cooper and coopertalk.net. Also, if you're on YouTube, look up Coop's Comedy Corner. It's produced by Comedy Trainwreck out of Philadelphia. I talk to some Emmy-winning writers. I talk to some comedians.
And
And I have another podcast called Lawsuits and Lessons with attorney extraordinaire John Fagerholm. Every 2 weeks, we talk to some amazing entrepreneurs. And if we have a legal issue, John will go into it. But I'm just the co-host, and I keep the moving along. So look up Lawsuits and Lessons on YouTube. Steph, what were you going to
I've
say?
got a YouTube channel
Okay,
coming out as
tell me about
well.
it. What's
Yeah,
up?
I do. I did one for about a year and a half. It was called Reflections with Stephanie Kramer. And basically, I just offered my thoughts and ideas based on a weekly quote. Just short and sweet, something to maybe open up people's minds to think differently or inspire them or to feel better, something positive. And then I'm creating one right now that's called The Other Side. And that's where I'm going to be delving into topics of the unseen and the unknown, like thought-provoking conversations with extraordinary guests, you know, reflecting, like they bring their insight and their clarity and their expanded awareness, just to our understanding. And it's going to be dealing with things in reality and what lies beyond, you know, spiritual enlightenment, some metaphysics, the paranormal, they will offer sort of those perspective, those perspectives of higher consciousness and kind of a deep inner knowing, reflecting on all those topics of which have been a part of my life since I was a kid. So I'm going to do an hour-long interview twice a month
And they can
with
find that by
wonderful.
looking on YouTube, just putting your name in and they'll
Yeah,
find it.
it's not published yet. I'm creating it. We're working on it now. It's going to be The Other Side with Stephanie Kramer.
Can we find the old one on there?
Oh yeah, it's on there. It's called Reflections
Okay.
with
So
Stephanie.
people go check it out. It's good.
That's, my hair was longer when I did Reflections.
Well,
I just.
it's good positive stuff. So please go check me out. I do want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank my guests. I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests. Don't forget, drink your water, eat your vegetables, take your vitamins, and I'll talk to you next time. Thank you.